Hello, operatives. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 11 of Once Upon a Kill Team, the podcast about narrative play in Warhammer 40k Kill Team. I'm Jason.
And I'm Sean. And I want to talk to you about building stories around the gameplay in this grim, dark, terrible universe. In this episode, we bring back the awesome guests George and Joe, who can tell us how their Kill Team narrative event at the New York Open went. We also took through the latest Kill Team reveals and much, much more.
We did say at the end of the last podcast we would be talking about and reviewing the new Salvation box, but it's not actually come out yet and might not even come out until after Uncle Santa has been and we're in a new year. So we'll see how that goes. But welcome, guys. Fantastic to have our first back-to-back episode guests.
Thanks. We're thrilled to be back. It is exciting to be back on the show, so thanks for having us.
I'm not saying you're the best, but we've never had people back-to-back episodes. As ever, of course, it's Hobby Corner. We love a bit of hobby here. George and Joe, have you got any wonderful things that you've been working on?
Sure. I play a Corsairs team as like a kind of one of my two kind of primary teams, I think. And I picked up some new models for that. Actually, I picked up the Eldari Warlocks kit and I converted one of those to be actually the Starstorm Duelist. So I gave him a pistol and I took, and I added a Fusion Blaster, actually, from the Autark kit. And he definitely has, like, a very strong Cal Jericho look, just the way I painted him and his robes. And, like, it gives me strong Cal Jericho vibes, which I think is a cool
add. Oh, perfect. Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'll do the other Warlock just to come in as the Psyker on the team. And I did buy I had painted this maybe a month and a half ago, but I also did an Autark. So I've kind of swapped all three of those in as new models to supplement the Corsair team.
I love the new Autark model. It's good. So slick.
It's good. It's like really, it's a pleasure to paint too. It's just really, really nice models, like fun to paint, a lot of character to them. So like very excited to paint them. And I'll just throw one more in there. I continued my foray into Sigmar and I purchased a Ogor Warhawk with the Fusil Major on the top. That's the little sniper in the crow's nest on top of an Ogor.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Definitely like Ogre sort of love affair here, so I definitely
you're talking my language.
I go to those models exactly. So I built that and primed it, and we'll work on that for probably as a like a longer term project.
Oh, that's really cool. Is that from the new Cities of Sigmar range?
It is. Yeah, it
very
is.
Very cool.
It's a very nice model. Really, you put it together. Yeah, you put it together. It's really just well detailed. It's nice. It's a really, they did a really good job with the sculpt.
Oh, that's great to hear.
What about you, George? Or have you just been relaxing?
It's Ogor season, apparently. I have also been painting trolls and ogres. So I picked up the Warcry Hunter and Hunted box, which is the newest kind of thing they have.
Yes.
Now, I have no intention of playing Warcry, but the models that system releases are just so good.
They're the best sculpts.
Yeah, they're really cool. So I picked that up because I want to start a Mordheim war band or whatever and play some Mordheim with Joe, actually. Seems to be the only other person in our team who's excited about doing that. So that's a project for like maybe, you know, Christmas time off. But in the meantime, I was like, well, I have all these like weird ogre troll things. What about painting out one of them? And one of the things that I really want to do is try and, because I've painting got me into the hobby originally, I think. And while I love painting, I've never really tried to do like a competition piece. So sure. I've taken one of these ogres, which are like big. There's lots of like skin and interesting details. Like it's quite a good canvas to like paint those really difficult types of textures and things on.
You could gain and highlight some musculature in those expansive shoulders.
exactly. And so that's what I've been doing over the last few weeks, is like building a little display base and a plinth and getting in there with that really fine detail and trying to do the best job I can there.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
George is underselling this. George is a very good painter, so I just want to throw that. George is exceptional. So, yeah.
Even the whip, I'd be happy to see a whip.
It's traditional that British people undersell and understate themselves. which I won't do now. I'm going to say, everybody get ready to...
I've been knocking it out the park.
Yeah, I am amazing. Everybody get ready to high-five me virtually, because the Chaos Cult team are finished. I did the torments. They're all lovely pink and magenta-coloured Slaanesh cult team. So they're ready. I'm very much looking forward to, dominating some poor schmucks in a game at some point. And then even more excitingly, I'm in the Space Marine business now. I managed to pick up one of the Strike Force Justian boxes. And my long-held ambition to have a Once Upon a Kill Team podcast bespoke Space Marine chapter, we have the Hearts of Oak kind of made. I'm now showing a model to the rest of the boys. So this is a silver-bodied and then sort of turquoise shoulder pad and knee in sort of the colours of the podcast logo. I've prepared an oak leaf chapter symbol, which I'm going to sort of print out on a sort of make a homemade decal. Thanks to Ants, friend of the show Ants, who did some graphics for me for that. And yeah,
he's great.
I'm really excited. I've got a bespoke. I've always wanted to do. If I was ever going to do, I'm not really into Space Marines, but if I was going to do it, I wanted to do a homebrew chapter. So listeners, this is our chapter, right? This is the podcast chapter. So in probably the next episode, I'll be doing a call out for help with the lore of these guys. So listen out for that. We won't do it this episode, but that'll be something exciting going forward. Can't wait. Anyway, it's very good. It turns out Space Marines are quite fun to paint. Who knew?
Again, big canvas. can't really go wrong with them.
Now, Sean, you must have been up to something good.
I got two projects on the go. Well, to be honest, one has finished. My new anointed,
who is absolutely flipping terrifying, genuinely, like I'm a bit scared.
I'm sure most people have seen him on Instagram or on Discord at some point, but he's got like the Galvorback pistol that's merged into his hand and everything, and I managed to semi-convincingly green stuff a join. I know what's wrong, but, you know, if you're looking at it from 3 feet away, no one's going to know.
Well, as he's
and of course,
as he's punching you in the face, you don't notice that, right?
No, it's a blur. He's in my traditional white and red patterning kind of post-heresy outfits, and he's got a suitable splattering of a Blood for the Blood God technical paint.
Very nice.
Just in line with everyone else. And then to keep me occupied and excited, I've been doing my Blades of Cain. I got Banshees, and they're kind of semi-witches. I've been giving each of my Banshees a unique power sword, and so that they're more gladiatorial. So, like, I've got one with, like, it's like an Ideneth, a harpoon. I've got one with some Scourge flails, and just really wanted to add to, like, the sense of movement. And these razor flail blades are just really cool for like getting a sense of this almost balletic warfare. I really dig them.
You sound like you're going to be hitting the ground running when that team comes out.
Yeah, hopefully. And I have, she isn't finished yet because I don't know what loadouts are allowed to go on the Exarch. But I've also got Jane Zarr, who I'll be modeling for disadvantage. She'll be visible from any side of the board. But she's going to be my Exarch.
They look so good.
Yeah. Sean, I'm right here with you. I actually ordered a box of Howling Banshees as well. I'm very excited for this. And yours look like they have a lot of character. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I got really excited. I managed to pick up Jane Zarr and 5 Banshees for like £40 on Facebook Marketplace, because some guy was just wanting to shift some of his old collection. I was like, I will take those off your hand.
Very, very nice.
So that's me. That's me.
So, what games, Sean, have you been up to lately?
I've been playing Kill Team, and it's been great. It's finally been happening. I've been playing a series of introductory games with Stephen, who ran the 40K Crusade at the Guildford Games Club that I was taking part in this year. And he showed an interesting Kill Team. So we've had two games so far. We've been playing No Ploys, No Equipment, just learning your operatives, learning the rules of the game. And it's been great. Each time we've been playing, we've been fitting in another turn in the time that we've got at the Games Club in an evening. So
nice.
Eventually, we'll be fully up to speed. Yeah.
You've been gaining recruits for the new players.
Exactly. So I've got a couple of people interested, but kind of build them up one by one. Because doing multiple introductory sessions on a night could probably drag out quite long.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
Yeah. Sounds good though. You're doing the Lord's work, or something. The Emperor's work.
The Emperor's work. What about you? Have you been squeezing games in?
Okay. I've got some good ones. So firstly, I just wanted to mention I had a lovely three-way battle royale with friend of the show Nick and Patrick. I was keen to give my Kazakin team a run out because I haven't really used them very much since I painted them. And we went against Nick using Strike Team Justian for the first time he was using them. And Patrick brought his Grey Knights, who are fantastically painted in a sort of myriad of bubblegum colours. And he's got a great background for them. Three ways are quite good fun. And you'll like this. The winner, of course, was the Grey Knights, who were tabled in turn three. Yet, out of all of us, were the ones who actually went and sat on the objectives. But I just wanted to mention one bit in it.
Patrick's good at playing the game.
It did, yeah, yeah. Points mean wins, but there was a great bit in it where his marine went and sat on an objective. It's one of these ones you can score every turn if you sit on it, and yeah. And then my Kazakin demo guy went and put his proximity mine on the objective and then ran away and got killed, but because it's a proximity mine, it stays there. So as long as this marine never moved, he could just keep shooting and scoring the point, which is what he did. And so I was sort of reluctant to shoot him myself, thinking the mine will do it for me. so that was...
Yeah. Oh, he's taken care of.
But he wasn't. It turns out he wasn't. Anyway, that was that was quite funny, only in Kill Team. And then I just wanted to talk about the last couple of games. So friend of the show, Sal, and I have been doing an Ashes of Faith campaign with the Wormblade.
Of course.
The Revolutionaries, the Red Hand Revolutionaries, and against being brutally repressed, might I say, by some Arbites. And we played Game 5, which was Battle of the Marketplace, where the Arbites received some intelligence on the location of a significant leader. And basically this was the mission where they had to eliminate my leader. And if I can just give you a mixed tale of woe and joy all wrapped into one, this sounds like the sort of how, you know, Kill Team should go. So firstly, on the plus side, I had the Locus on the team, modeled by your very self, and I absolutely love that model.
Of course.
Four blades, absolute. This Locus killed four of these Arbites. Absolute. And sorry, not even the rubbish ones, like the ones with shields, which are the hard ones to kill. And he killed the leader, I think, who's really hard to kill. He had the shield. So plus, Killamorph got a couple of kills. So my cult agents were doing what cult agents should do.
On fire.
On fire. And all I had to do was keep my leader alive and I was going to win this. And I could have totally run away behind a bit of hardcover, but no, Sean, I was greedy and I wanted to score some extra points and guarantee that I, you know, got the points to win. And bloody hell, would you know, he didn't survive. And it was one of these things where it was like 6 VP to kill the leader or something. So I was in a position where I thought, I've won it. End of turn three, I've won this. There's no way I can lose this. I just have to...
clap your hands together, jobs are good. And...
honestly, I was smiling to myself. I don't win that many games, so I was thinking, this is I've got this one. Didn't. Ah, the come down from when you think you've got it to when you haven't. Anyway, emotional roller coaster. But I'm still, you know, the locust killed four. That was pretty good. I'm sad to say, and it's just George is not with us. He's not died. He's just not on the show. I'm afraid to tell him that the Wormblade lost control and were pushed out of 5 out of 6 districts in this Ashes of Faith campaign. So there was no way back.
Crackdown.
So it was a real police crackdown. And I've got to say, these police are not playing by the rules. They'll arrest you and then some guy will come in and shotgun you in the face. So not good. So we didn't play the game 6 because there was just no way I could come back from it. So we went straight to the ritual game. So
skipping to the end of the book, it was.
Skipping to the end of the book. So it was still something to win, still all to play for. Really, really good. Really good close game. And there were 6 objectives across the middle of the board, and we had it in my mind that these are like alien style eggs, and each one is like a psychic beacon, and I had to pick one secretly, which was going to be the main beacon to attract the Star Children to come and rescue the situation. Now. Of course, I managed to keep the main objective, the 6 VP objective, but by like a couple of points. It all came down to essentially who controlled one of the lesser objectives, and Sal managed it. So in the last couple of activations, I lost the game. So bad news if you're fans of the High Fleet. I'm afraid this planet is staying firmly with the Imperium for the time being. But what a great series of games. I just want to give a special...
That sounds really, really high drama. Really good fun.
Really good. I've really enjoyed Ashes of Faith. I would highly recommend it. I just want to give a special mention to Sal, who's just such a gentleman. Several times over the course of this campaign, I've forgotten a rule of my own team, and he's reminded me, and just the sort of opponent you really want to be having. It's really, really, really good. And yeah, just so flavorful. Two teams that just felt so appropriate to be sort of fighting each other. And anyway, super. I'll definitely do a Ashes of Faith style campaign again. That was excellent. Those were those games, but we also have the Once Upon a Kill Team campaign now. We played a couple of missions a few weeks ago, and I can report that we've got another couple of games that we're going to be playing very tomorrow. So we'll report,
very tomorrow.
We'll report back on those next time. But, right, do you want to kick us off? Where are we?
Well, things are hotting up. With only garbled or incomplete messages getting through to the regimental HQ, Recon Platoon are starting to feel desperate. Knowing extra forces cannot be spared, Sergeant Nelson fears the worst. Salvation comes in many forms. In this case, a lone drop pod descends from the skies. Out steps the fearsome figure of Commissar Butterbur. His eyes fall on the troopers like laser beams. There will be no retreat. Not one step back, or I will shoot you myself. Get to the walls, you scum. The storm has arrived. Somewhere out there, an orc commando nub muttered something like, I am the storm.
Ooh. what a great game this was. Sergeant Nelson has been temporarily relieved of his command, and Commissar Butterbur will lead the troops for the time being. The huge Microstorm approaching forward operating base Bowhead, which seems to have saved the guardsmen from the bulk of the Greenskins. However, nothing seems to have deterred the commandos. This was a pretty great mission, I thought, because we had to always consider which side of a wall we were on. And I don't know about you, but yeah. There was a couple of times I wasn't sure if I should go on the side of the wall that would shield me from getting shot, or on the side of the wall where I would be continually injured or treated as injured because of this storm. That was good fun. Really interesting sort of tactical consideration with that storm.
I definitely made the suboptimal choice where I was on the wrong side of the wall, and my poor orcs were getting buffeted by this shredding sandstorm. And my burner boy was limping away, injured, half dead, and like just trying to get somewhere. And it was just, I don't know, it felt like really like you were in it, as it were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It
massively controlled the flow of battle.
Yeah, no, I liked it. It's made me think whether with the new season, with like these sort of sea ravaged platforms, whether we're going to get those kind of, you know, that kind of rules in the narrative bits, perhaps. But anyway, let's not, a rare win for the guard here, who managed to just about fight off, I think, the orcs. It's desperate stuff. But maybe the commissar had an edge. I would say that he didn't get to use. So the special rule that the commissar had is if he shoots someone, well, I think so. Some people within, I can't remember the rule now, within six can't be injured. Is that it?
Yes. Yeah. Which helped massively to negate the effects of the storm, but you never got to use it.
No, he was too busy fighting. The trouble is, he's a fighting commissar.
I kept charging him.
I can't say I'm proud to declare that I was really wanting to shoot one of my own men just to use his power, which I thought... Sorry, guys. That's really tough. But then we played the next mission, Smoking Ruins. What have we got to say about that?
Having been driven off in the storm, the commandos were able to call in a fighter bomber, which made several buildings turn into rubble. No matter, the 53rd Wexmouth can fight in any condition. In an interesting twist, the Commissar has been brought in to bolster morale again and ensure no retreat by the troops. It's very much a case of do as I say, not as I do. Though our erstwhile disciplinarian skedaddled to try and avoid getting whacked when down to a couple of wounds, it didn't do him much good as he was killed anyway. Obviously, Imperial records have now been redacted.
Right, I just want to
this
say...
This battle ended. Oh, go on.
I just want to say how embarrassed I was. I thought I could... if this was played thematically, he should stay in combat and basically just get killed. But no, I ran him away. Am I a bad person? Am I... Maybe I'll be stripped of my guard credentials.
Well, there was no one there to execute him for morale, so...
No, who watches the watchers?
Exactly. This battle ended in a draw, both sides being fought to a standstill. We're playing again tomorrow. We've got demolitions and infiltrate the landing pad. Can't wait.
Now, commandos and dynamite, that sounds like I know which side you're going to be on.
Our bag of tricks.
Bag of tricks. No, this will be really good. I've been so enjoying this series, so can't wait for tomorrow. And you listeners out there can find out how we're doing. It's feeling super thematic, this really beleaguered base in the middle of nowhere surrounded by hostile greenskins. Really good. Okay, so we may not have had even any more information about Kill Team Salvation, but we have weirdly had our first teaser for the second box, so the box after Salvation in Season 3, which appears to be another traitor marine team, the Night Lords, and I think they're called the Nemesis Claw, which in my mind makes me think of the Hooded Claw from Penelope Pitstop. But so if you didn't think that the regular legionary team was scary enough, hide behind your pillow, turn on a light, because we have Night Lords. Are they the scariest of the scary? We actually already have a team called the Phobos, which means fear. So, anyway, what do you guys think? First impressions? Anyone want to dive in?
I dig them. They're really cool, super fluffy and characterful. At least in the sculpt, we've no clue about rules, but they look haunting, which is perfect.
Yeah, I'm always going to support like new something flavorful for a fun faction that has like a dedicated following, some cool new bits to bring in. I think the Chaos Marines always take really well to like lots of accessories. I'm always going to support there being more modeling for them. I am interested to see what the rules are and how they are different than a legionary team. You kind of see this sort of chain axe, like you see this sort of Shrive Talon-esque model. I'm like interested to see how it's different. Don't see a Psyker, obviously, but like wondering what's different. But I do think the aesthetic is cool, the vibe's cool, so I'd be excited to see some people playing them.
Well, the one that's got me guessing is the Ventrilocar, the guy with the space marine on an icon.
Say that fast.
Ventrilocar.
Oh, God, he's too good.
I practiced.
Yeah. What does so? His okay.
I've got it here in front of me.
Yeah.
His puppet's corrupted omophagia can mimic the voices of anyone whose flesh it consumes.
So. So you go in, you murder someone else,
eat them,
or maybe just wound them, and then you feed. There's an action, presumably some sort of action point to put it in his little mouth.
Yeah,
and then he speaks in the voice of your mate who's just gotten chopped up. I don't know what that like. Seems like a lot of effort. Like,
maybe you can pinch someone else's ability or something.
Oh my gosh, what if you can order, what if it becomes like you can control the other operative or stop it from doing something?
Sort of control. I see this as a control team rather than a kill team. Killy team, I mean.
Sneaky rather than killy.
Yeah, exactly.
But they look very killy. There's a lot of weapons.
Yeah, you're going to get shanked a lot in it, I think.
I'm really interested in the guy who's got his little hood on. He's got a poison blade, a bolt gun that looks like it's got a silent kind of... Well, it's also got a scope, which might mean it's a silent situation. And he seems to have a little vial of something. That's probably like a... on his belt. Might be poison. I always thought maybe it was a grenade, like some sort of poison grenade, but he feels like a silent character who can like charge from conceal and shoot from conceal and do that sort of stuff, which sounds fun.
I think they're all going to potentially be able to charge from conceal.
Oh yeah, it did say that's, something like
I
that.
I think if they start their turn within cover, they can charge from conceal. That's what they alluded to. They sounded like they could move from the shadows to strike suddenly. That sounds like if you start your turn within an inch of cover. That seems like a good caveat.
I was hoping he was going to be a mixologist and he can whip you up a cocktail mid-battle to calm your nerves. And it doesn't have to be dull, does it? So
it's such a good alternative to the Reaver mask as well.
So I've got a question for you guys, because I don't know my Drukhari lore very much. So I think the word on the street and I always have my ear to the street, is racks are going to be the kind of opposite of these ones. Who knows what a rack is? Give me the lowdown. Is it nobody?
Joe shaking his head.
Nope.
I can leap
nope.
in. Racks are... So the three factions of the Drukhari, you've got your homunculi, your witches, and your Calebites. The homunculi are like flesh sculptures. It's one of the most grimdark things you can get. The racks are other unfortunate Dark Eldar or human or Tau or whoever they've managed to raid and collect and make slaves. They sculpt them into living weapons, or like how the Imperium makes servitors, the Drukhari make custom-built racks to do a purpose, help them out in the surgery, or just silently march up the battlefield shrugging off wounds, because what's pain? They've already gotten into this shape.
Sounds interesting. So it sounds like you could have a lot of specialists there then. You can tailor them to whatever you like. Okay, I'm warming.
Yeah. Maybe they never count as injured because they're inured to pain, or they've got like venom syringes and slicey scissor hands and everything. Like, there's a lot of play.
Okay, well, sounds like pretty decent interest in Night Lords, and we'll see what we get with the Drukhari racks. It is time for the Once Upon a Kill Team mailbag section. So we don't have anything to read out this week, but hold on to your butts, because we have a absolutely generous, wonderful, I'm reading what I've written here, Christmas giveaway. So have you out there, our listeners, are you someone who hasn't yet started your kill team? You listen to the show, you've been thinking of getting into it, but you haven't started yet. Do you have a friend that you would like to get into Kill Team, but they need a little bit of help, a little bit of a leg up? If so, we may have some things to give you a hand. So firstly, we have a full set of tokens, measuring tools, the original TACOP cards, if they're still relevant, and a core rulebook to give away. So this is a great starting set for anyone who wants to start out. Nice set of starting stuff. But that's not all. You can't start a kill team unless you have a team. So if you also need a kill team, we have 6 Space Marine Infiltrator models, 5 of which were painted in a snazzy blue and red colour scheme and painted by my own fair hand. They're a little bit like the Brazen Claws, if you know that chapter. And I named them after the Monty Python crew. So what a great start that would be. These models can be used with the Intercessor rules, or better still, the Phobos kill team rules. That would be a great starter team for anyone. And we're going to give these away. We're going to give these 2 things away. It doesn't have to be to the same person. Now, sadly, we can only make this available to our UK listeners, but we will post it to anywhere in the UK. Sorry, rest of the world, when we get a better budget, we'll be sorting you out. All you need to do is message us in our usual channels, tag us in an Instagram or a Threads post, get us on email, send us a message. Tell us why you like Kill Team, why the game of Kill Team, and why someone needs a bit of a help starting out, whether that's you or a friend. So please get in touch. onceuponakillteam@gmail.com, onceuponakillteam on Instagram, onceuponakillteam on Threads. Yeah, let's see what we can do.
I think people would be lucky. It's a great looking team.
I mean, if I say so myself,
I'm
a bit gutted to get to get rid of them. but it's only because I've got another set of I've got a Phobos team in addition. So I think somebody should be using these very nicely painted models.
Too right.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the main topic of today. Last time we talked about what you need to set up a Kill Team narrative event, and this time we can see how it went. Now, I was lucky enough, George or Joe, can't remember which one, you gave me access to the Discord for this event, and I was following it as it was going on, and I've got to say it was just really entertaining watching the Discord and seeing what people were writing in the run-up to the event and the event itself. But how did it go?
It went well. I will say the Discord thing was really important to the, maybe not the success of the day, but partly and definitely it helped like hype up the attendees like before and after, and so I think that went pretty well. For example, we talked last time about these secret objectives, which were like little kind of not quite tac ops but missions that we set each player, and they were really like fluffy and completely unique, and we sent them those missions via Discord, and then they kind of talked back to us, so they had that one-on-one channel with us, and as well as the kind of channel or group for each of the sort of two factions, because we split everyone into two different kind of opposing teams, and then a broader one for everyone in the narrative that anyone could kind of jump into. So that I think was really great. I was worried that maybe not everyone would have Discord or would be checking it, but actually it was a really great way for people to ping us with questions and just like feel part of the whole story.
Yeah, on the secret objectives in Discord, like we actually asked players to, one, share like their team history and like why their team is in this, is coming to Ardentum, like with the rest of the kind of other folks that are playing. But we asked them also, when we gave them, we actually asked them to give us specific input for what kind of secret objectives they might be interested in achieving, right? So not just like, not to tell us exactly what you want to do, but tell us like, what's your team's reason to be here? And then we crafted a secret objective that was unique to them. So in some instances, they were really highly themed. George, if you wanted to tell about the juice, you could do that. Like, you know, there were some cool ones there that were just like, this is your team's lore. Or we had an Alpha Legion player who wasn't clear that he was an Alpha Legion player, what, you know, on the tabletop. We had some cool stuff where we were able to make secret objectives that were really suited to what they wanted to do.
Yeah, some examples then, like, so it ranged from people who were taking it reasonably seriously to people who were there to have a load of fun and had really kooky, silly things. So, for example, one Chaos Cults player, his background was that the cultists weren't fully aware that they were in a cult, but there was one that the cult leader had managed to bribe the poor citizens of this world into going on this strange set of missions by promising unlimited supplies of juice, purple juice. And so they were on the lookout for more juice, and the cult leader was panicking because he was running out of juice. So his secret objective was to loot the bodies of 10 operatives, which was a mission action, over the course of this of one day, and if he managed to do that, they would get enough juice to complete this secret mission. So that was obviously ludicrous. And then, but some of them were much more kind of flavorful, but also a bit more serious. So there was one team of Kassakin who were known throughout the galaxy for being really efficient and coming in and striking first. So we gave that person's secret objective was to cause like the first, make sure that they got the first kill on every one of their games. And also we, because we know a lot of these players, some of them were really, are really good, really skilled players. So we made some of them a little challenging. So I think the same cults player had to catch 5 enemy operatives in a single vortex thing, which he managed to do.
Wow.
Forcing people to bunch up. So It was good. Yeah.
Herding people into a crowd.
We also had one player we knew was. We also had one player we knew was going to tech heavy into stun grenades. So yeah. we gave a secret objective to like get, I think it was like 4 models with a single stun grenade or something. And so then it was, you know, 2 or 3 games in, you suddenly just heard this. Yes, I did it. You know, you heard that sort of like just exclamation of joy like a few times, which was pretty cool. Yeah, so that was good. It was nice. And like being able to give people those objectives in advance meant that they could think about it and kind of build some of the plan around it. And they gave us feedback too that said like, oh, that's like, what if I did it slightly differently? And we could say like, oh yeah, well, here's a way for this to be challenging but rewarding. So
yeah,
that was nice. And I think part of it for us is just remembering that people come to play narrative for different reasons, right? Some people really want to embrace the story of their team. Some people just want a little less competitive kill team. Like some people just want, people want different things. So like trying to give them the tools to play the game they want to play is part of what I think a good narrative event does.
I don't know if we answered the original question about how it went. We sort of span on really quickly.
Yeah, we started going down real fast.
I think that was still a good answer, even if unrelated. It sounded like people had fun though.
People had fun. I think that's true. We got a lot of positive feedback. And I think, you know, we set ourselves a bit of a challenge because we had this 2-day event and people were allowed to come for 1 day if they wanted to. So you didn't have to sign up for the full weekend, which meant that we needed the end of day one to feel like a conclusion for some people that weren't going to be there on day two. And we needed this day two to be also self-contained because people were coming in then without having it played before in the previous day. So I think we managed to do that fairly well, but it was definitely the end of day two that I really felt people were getting like super excited, and we had this final showdown between the two kind of protagonists, this evil voice that turns out to be a Tzeentch greater demon that has been bound in the planet, and the Inquisitor. And so the kind of conceit for the final game of the full weekend was these two were battling it out in single combat. The demon was emerging into real space, and the teams were fighting over kind of different ritual sites. And depending on whether the teams that were following the voice, the kind of evil teams, depending on how successful they were in the mission at the end of each turning point, that would affect how powerful this demon was becoming and how that kind of one-on-one battle was going. And so that kind of felt really good. And there was this building tension, and at the end, it was very, very close, actually, because we were tracking points and tracking wins just to see who was kind of coming out on top, not to make it too much about who was winning each game, but just to like make sure there was a narrative impact.
And something. You were updating that after each round, weren't you?
Trying to. I mean, the rounds ended up finishing at different times, so it was a little. We were a little loose on that, but essentially, like at the end of each. When most people had finished the first round, we would make an announcement, and we posted this on the Discord, like what was happening in this fight and how their actions were impacting it. And I think like when we did that final reveal of who had won, the feeling in the room was really good. I think we managed to build up that kind of energy that you kind of. That we'd hoped for.
That's great, because at the end of 2 days of kill team, you can imagine a lot of people may have run out of energy. So I think that's a huge achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
Did most of your players stay for 2 days, or did was it kind of half and half with how many dropped in and how many stayed to see it through?
So we offered tickets as like you could choose to come for 1 day or not, right? So we just had 20 spaces per day. And so I would say we had more than 50% of players choose both to do both days. I think that's right. And then, you know, the rest, we had basically like, you know, we had more players interested than we had spaces available. Many players are here for both days. Some are here for one or the other, but we tried to make the event that each day should be fun on its own. And if you're here for both, like, you get the full story, and you still get a satisfying story if you're only there for one.
You did some bespoke terrain, and I should have asked the people who attended, really, but how did that go down? It looked, I've got to say, from the photos, it looked really, really good. I particularly like the trenches, which was really nice. How did that go down?
Yeah, I think it went down well. We had, you know, we had a range of bespoke terrain we built. Some jungle boards, which Grotgard John was really the driving creative force behind and did most of the design for it. But we kind of spent a very long night flocking and paint and gluing and painting and kind of making everything come together. We made sure to like move the terrain around and build the terrain for each mission, because we had adapted narrative missions for this sort of 6-mission campaign arc that we delivered over the 2 days. So, you know, in between every round, we moved the terrain around. I think people really enjoyed it. It had it's a very different style than what you would see in a traditional Kill Team board, right? It's not Octarius terrain. It's not ruins. It's levels of kind of jungle platforms, large rocks, large trees, like very tall trees. We were able to use that to create kind of clearings, a lot of little jungle flora, and then kind of sometimes we build those mission objectives in a clearing with multiple kind of stacked platforms all around it, so you could kind of climb and come up over the top of the rocks, and we'd put little ladders and things like that just to give places some more access points. And I think it was fun. And then we also had trench boards, which is also another unique bit. And we could build some of the narrative elements around the trenches and make sure that there's sufficient kind of light cover in there. I think it was fun because it just makes it feel different. And when you're playing across similarly themed boards over the event, it does feel like you're on this planet. You're not playing the same board over and over again. You're playing different variations, but it feels like your kill team's actually moving around, and I think that it seemed like people really responded well to that.
That's really cool. I really like the look of the train station or train depot board. That was really cool with the like, there's a lot of open space on there.
Yeah, but
it looked great.
There's not as much as you think, because the trains themselves become like these big blocks of heavy terrain, and then there's a way of moving around it that's quite that keeps you kind of safe. The other thing that's really fun about that board is that you, because of the trains and the kind of different platforms and buildings on the platforms are kind of at the same level, you can quite easily make jumps between the various things. So some people did notice that, hang on a minute, can I actually get up here and move across this board as if there's nothing there, essentially because there's like all of these are 3-inch jump tests.
Everyone forgets about jumping.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of jumping in this one, especially because you can jump over the trenches as well. What we saw was really fun was some people failing jump tests and deciding that rather than just stand still, which is what the rules say, they would have their model fall over and fall down the gap.
I think that's what we should do. One more wound.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was like the first announcement. The first thing we said on each of the first days is like, okay, this terrain is not official. Like, obviously, it's very weird. Some pieces are little plant fronds and bits of kind of silly, tiny objects. And you need to decide, as grown-ups playing a fun game, like what you think is light cover, what is insignificant. And like, we trust you to talk that out and be like, and do whatever feels fun. And by all means, call us over if you want someone else to make that decision for you. But like, you know, there's got to be a bit of like wiggle room here, because it's all a bit weird. And if there's something that makes sense to you that you want to do for the story, talk to your opponent and then like go for it. We're not going to stop that. And I think people like when you give people that sort of permission, they do fun stuff, and I think that it worked, thankfully.
Did you find most of your attendees were more sportsmanly than you anticipated? I can imagine if people are there for fun, then they may let a couple more things slide or whatnot.
I think people were really good sportsmen, and like, I do think we like expected that, because like it's a fun, loving group. Like people are out to have a good time, but you definitely saw people kind of. I certainly saw a game where it was a Hand of the Archon versus Talons, like Custodes, and there was a Sister of Silence within. Maybe it wasn't Hand of the Archon, but there was a Sister of Silence, like just barely within 6 inches of a Psyker, and the Talons player was like, "I'm gonna move my model because I want you to do this. Like, I want you to be able to do this psychic thing. I want to see this." And I was like, "That's so like it was like they had worked hard to get in the right spot, and then it was like one of those things where they noticed like, oh, actually, you're just kind of within
just
range
on
where
the
this
fringe.
Yeah, where this Sister can kind of." Deny your ability to do psychic, and the player was like, "No, it would be so much fun for you to do that. Go for it." And I feel like I saw a few examples of that, and I think that's a bit of the fun thing that narrative takes the pressure. When it takes the pressure off, it lets you be just kind of like, "Hey, let's just have a good time with this game. It'll be fun."
Exactly. Yeah. I really like it when there's been a lot of talk in the community about like celebrating your opponent's failures as well as your victories, like, and just having more fun together rather than like there's my enemy across the board. And I think narrative and certainly the people we play with, and it sounds like the people that attended your event just kind of embody that. It's really happy to see being played out.
Huge shout out to the people who came. Cause those are the people that made it fun, right? Like it's their experience. That's the enjoyable bit.
Yeah.
And when Sean said celebrate other people's failures, he's not saying in your face. What do you think of that? that's not what we meant. I don't know. I always think that. I think if Sean and I go and run an event, I want to do a thing whereby we literally have a few chocolate bars on us, and if anybody rolls 4 ones at any point in the game, they just get a chocolate bar because you need it.
Hand out a little treat.
Something like that, because you know we've all done the catastrophic dice roll at some point, or we've seen one.
Yes. Yeah. First one to explode their plasma gunner wins.
Right. I've got talking of plasma gunner. Right. So something I thought was absolute genius in the organisation of this was the champions idea. So each kill team, each person picks a champion from their team, and is it like who gets the most kills in the day? Is that how it works? How did that turn out? And I really want to know who was the killiest operative.
Oh man, it was. I think to me this was a highlight of the event, and I think for some people it was too. Basically we asked every player to nominate a champion. That champion needs to stay the same throughout the day. We asked them for the champion's name and a small picture and a photo of the operative beforehand. We also had like a Isaias from our team had like a little Polaroid printer, like sticker printer as well. So we made a board and we had Velcro stickers on, like Velcro and little placards with the character's name and an image of them. And then as they got kills, they got a point for every kill, and they for every kill by the champion, and they got 2 points if the champion killed another champion. So if your champion went one-on-one with the other, then that got you 2 points. And then people were calling them out, and we were moving this board in real time, and people were moving fast. We used little stickers to keep track of how many kills each had. And people racked it up. I think one player from our community, Gatsby, runs an intercessor team. His sergeant... Sergeant Hermes of like a Blood Angel successor champion chapter, I think, had 14 kills on day two.
Ouch.
Is that, I think that's right. It was like insane. And there was a lot of competition. Like people, the top spot was moving around a lot, except Sergeant Hermes on day two. Once he got up top, he stayed there. Like, but I think like Gatsby was like, you know, Gatsby was aiming to win that he was like,
he was gunning for.
Yeah. He was like, I want that. Once he started, once he got a taste of that the first day, he just kept going for it.
So think about this for a second. Yes, he's an intercessor sergeant who can fight twice and shoot. But 14 or 15 kills over three games is a lot of kills for one.
That's a lot.
I feel he's going to get a promotion.
Almost five kills per game. Yeah. Or sectioned and kept like somewhere. Somewhere secret, never let out. I think he managed to be paired up into some squishy horde teams that may have helped. but oh my gosh, yeah. So Gatsby didn't really play. He was playing a different game. He was playing Captain Hermes goes on a killing spree.
Squish the bugs.
Get up the champions board. I don't give a monkeys what is happening with this mission. He was focused on one thing only, and that's absolutely fine.
That sounds like my kind of guy.
yeah
He's great. He really brings a really great like vibe to all of the games that like he'll play in narrative stuff a lot, but also come to the tournaments, and he doesn't always win, but it's always like, such a pleasure for anyone playing against him. And I think that's like he's one of those players that kind of really brings those vibes to the whole room. It's good. He's a good guy.
Were there any other killy operatives that we all should look out for?
So I think the second... Joe, can you... I know. So we split the... Oh, you got them all. Excellent. Yeah. So we split them into two... there were two boards, one for each team. So like the good guys, Imperium team, and the bad guys. So there was a little bit of competition between them two, but there was also just an overall score. So
this is just day two. So right, this is not a cumulative score across 2 days. So I'm just looking at the board from the end of day two. So like Sergeant Hermes had 14 kills. There was another intercessor sergeant with 11. Then there was the custodies leader had 10. Then the next was also 10 with the death jester. And then Heebly the Mind Witch, she had, 2, 4, 6, 7. But like people start like, oh, and a big winner on day one was Zeta the plasma gun, the plasma cannon servitor from the inquisitorial agents team. That was, I think there was a couple of plasma cannon shots.
He doesn't really even know he's the champion
on day one. No idea. Just out there doing his job.
I mean, he looked handsome in red as well. I've got your Hall of Champions up in front of me at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, we also, like, in Discord we had a Hall of Champions channel, and so every champion was asked to be listed in that channel beforehand so that you could see who the other champions were and kind of just take a little bit of pride in who your champion would be on the field of battle that day.
Set your targets on them as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what a genius idea. I really applaud you there. But let's not bury the lead any longer. Was the winner Inquisitor Rorkal? Or the mysterious... Or is it the mysterious Aetheric?
Aetheric.
So the story was... This voice calls out into the void, drawing lots of kill teams to this planet of Ardentum. Simultaneously, Inquisitor Rorkal, which I hadn't tried to pronounce out loud until I sort of spoke for the first time at the event and realized with Rorkal, I think, was also asking, trying to get Imperium aligned kill teams to the planet as well to investigate what was going on. Over the first day, it was revealed that the Lords of Ardentum, who are the governing kind of planetary governors, were actually kind of in league with this voice. They had been going annually to make a blood sacrifice to this demon, and it had kept them in power and given them an unnaturally long life. So, but in doing so, they were binding the demon, so it wasn't able to kind of be sort of summoned. So there was this strange situation where the Inquisitor decided, well, okay, these lords, even though this is a very heretical kind of horrible ritual, they need to be able to continue with it. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem because the demon needs to be sated in this way. So the end of day one, the Lords of Ardentum are revealed as traitors, and then the voice, the demon's kind of kill teams, tried to intervene with their annual ritual and successfully did so. So what happened was the demon was kind of released in some form.
Oh no!
Unbound. Yes. Oh no! And then the start of day two, we kind of reset the scene. The result is that with the demon slightly more kind of unbound, it was having a greater influence on the planet, and it was building up to a ritual where it was going to kind of fully manifest as a greater demon into real space. And so the aim of day two was to kind of gather the sort of these psychic crystals and bring them to a ritual site. And then, as I kind of talked about before, the final battle was one-on-one combat between Inquisitor Rorqual and this demon. And so it was extremely close. So close, because we were racking up the victory points, or actually the wins and losses from every game. It was so close that we were really worried that it was going to be a dead tie, and I hadn't written a narrative
outcome for a tie.
Yeah, we did not have a plan for a tie.
And what did it came down to? A single point.
It was a one were, point.
Yeah, and yeah. we were thinking we might have to take the whoever was the winner of the champions board as like the deciding
tiebreaker
or something like that.
Yeah.
The end, I think Inquisitor Rorqual did manage to destroy the emerging demon and come out on top. So the planet was saved from demonic incursion or whatever, and Inquisitor Rorqual lived. Unfortunately, soon after, the planet was deemed to have been too heretical and irredeemable, and was destroyed. Because you can't really have a happy ending.
No, that's a good ending.
That's a good ending. Yeah, we thought it's too close to be all sunshine and daisies. So we did tell them that.
Well, very much a exploded. Knockabout screwball comedy from my. Well, that sounds brilliant. I love. Going so close at the end. That's how you want. You know, if you can script these things, that's how you want them to go. So that sounds absolutely, absolutely brilliant. Have you made any thoughts about running it again next year or similar events? Is it too early to say?
It was a lot. I'll say this. It was a lot of work. We didn't do ourselves any favors, because we did try to sort of pack a lot in, and it made organizing the story, but also like making sure that people were paired in a way that made sense narratively with these two teams, etc. Like it made it a little bit difficult, and it was good fun work, but it still was a lot of work, and we were exhausted by the end of day two. So I think we need a break before we think about it. But I don't know, Joe, what do you got any ideas for another one?
I think it was a lot of fun. I agree. It was a lot of work. I think like we will give some thought to that. I would say like some things we learned, right? Like try to simplify as much as you can, right? Like there's a lot of, it's very easy to think about adding like very interesting rules for particular missions. Like I think reducing the amount of like moving parts for makes for a better player experience. So like give them the scenario, give them a cool place, a cool board, and like a reason for their team to be there, and then let them play. Try to make that as simple as possible. And then for yourself, if you're planning this event, like make sure you do as much beforehand to simplify how you operationalize like your actual day of experience. So things for us like doing team assignments beforehand, doing mission secret objectives beforehand via Discord, doing like sending out basic rules beforehand, like here's how we're going to do this, like here's how this will be handled. Then also doing things like setting up a tracker for how you're going to track scores, like so that we had something that when we were getting all the questions about rules in the game, but people were also saying, hey, I won my game, hey, I did my secret objective, right? Having something easy that we could use to input all that data and then have it out, spit out a score, so we could say like, oh, right now the score is this, not have to run off and go tally things or keep it written somewhere else. That's important. And then if you can do pairings in advance too, right? If you can say like, hey, I want to think critically about how these teams should match up and what each player is going to play against, to give them a variety of teams that they're playing against, do that. If you do all those sorts of things in advance, it makes your day of much easier, because you will spend a lot of your time answering questions and like answering rule questions, coming back and saying like, oh, do I have line of sight to this? Is this obscure? And so if you're you're going to need to move boards around and reset objectives and all those sorts of things. So like, don't underestimate the amount of time that you need just to keep things moving, and try to do as much planning beforehand as you can. So I'd say those are two big learnings that I'd suggest for anyone who's considering running a narrative event. I think they're a lot of fun. I think they're really satisfying, but they are work, and you want to do as much up front before the event starts as you can.
Wise. That sounds amazing. I'm so grateful for you guys coming on the show and sharing your experience. I'm only a bit gutted that we weren't able to be there in person and partake, or at least be a witness, because it sounds like the kind of event Sean and I would really, really love. Thanks so much for being on the show. Good luck. Let's keep in touch, and send us the plane ticket for next year.
thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a pleasure catching up, and this feels like a really good like bookend to the thing. So thank you, and we will definitely let you know about plans for narrative next year, because it's definitely going to happen. I think
it is going to happen. We could have it all, but we'll probably do it.
I promise not to steal any ideas until after your event has happened. So,
I make no such promises.
You're welcome to take them. They're here to use.
I've already, mentally stolen all these brilliant ideas. But I'll just be upfront about it. Anyway, thanks, guys. Have a lovely Christmas, and speak to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you. Too.
Take care, gents.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
So, next time on Once Upon a Kill Team, who knows? Maybe we'll have pre-orders for Salvation, maybe another sneaky reveal from GW of another single kill team. Maybe it'll just be us rounding off the year, looking back, being merry.
But rest assured, I look forward to it. It'll be good. If what you heard on this podcast sounds even remotely interesting, subscribe and tell your friends. And I'd even add, if your podcast thingy has a review section, please give us a favourable review if you've enjoyed us. For every subscription to the podcast, your Space Marine Eliminator carefully selects a heretic marine in his sights, squeezes the trigger, and gains another kill for the Emperor.
If you have a few spare pennies and would like to support the show, you can do so through Ko-fi. There's a link in the show notes. Once Upon a Kill Team will always be free, but any help you can give goes towards making the podcast better. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Once Upon a Kill Team. Just remember, it's not whether you won or lost. It's whether your ventriloquist mimics the cries of a child just before another of the claw pounces upon the disorientated victim. Did I get the pronunciation right?
No, but it doesn't matter.
See you all next time.